This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? It is November 11th. This Thursday, we're here at the Treasure Chest Casino, and plenty to talk about this hour. Not going to waste any time. Going to get right into it. Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, joins us now. Zach, appreciate you joining us on Short Time. Massive news, obviously, going on right now.
Yeah, obviously, we're sitting here in the midst of number one quarterback in America, Bryce Underwood, backing off of his commitment to LSU. It's just one that's sending shockwaves across the college football scene, and I'm here to talk about it.
Zach, one of the things is when – I know you and I have talked about this over the last two or three weeks. There's rumors were out there, maybe a little over $2 million a year in the NIL deal. It looks to be probably – that's correct on what happened. We always felt that, man, it's hard sometimes when you have a hometown guy that he's going to leave – and go somewhere else. But the lineage, what LSU has done with quarterbacks, certainly had that road open for him. Now, with him flipping, what is plan B and C? Is it, do they have a prep quarterback that they would go after? Or will this change the philosophy and them try to get a transfer guy to come in? Because, man, this is late in the game, real late, if you're looking at a top prep quarterback.
Yeah, no doubt, Mike. And I think it's important to talk about the magnitude of losing a Bryce Underwood. Obviously, this is a program-changing prospect who has thrown life-changing money at his way. I mean, the Michigan Wolverines were throwing around an NIL package in the ballpark of $10.5 million over the course of 4 years. So, ultimately, he lives 30 minutes down the road from Ann Arbor. This is a guy who's from that area, has not visited unofficially or officially. The only visits that he's taken are to Baton Rouge to check in with LSU 3, 4, 5 times this year. Hasn't checked in with Michigan, but at the end of the day, money talks, and it did here in the grand scheme of things with Underwood. And now you look towards plan B, like you were alluding to, and is there a prep guy that they're looking at? Is there a transfer portal guy? And I can tell you that right now, there's not a prep guy, but you're going to have to hit that portal with force and see what guys you can get out there, because you got to go and get yourself another quarterback other than Nussmeier.
Okay, now I got to flip my money. Now I got to do what I got to do to keep Garrett. And we were talking about that earlier in the show. I know his dad don't have a lot of influence on him, and we saw what happened in the second year with Joe Burrow as a starter. We saw what happened the second year with Jaden Daniels. I would never tell somebody to go or stay, but the history tells you, you know, you need a little bit more experience there. And I think his dad, understanding the game, being a former NFL player and coaching at the collegiate NFL level, that may be the part where you maybe can flip your money and try to get him to come back for another season.
It's just about imperative that Garrett Nussmeier returns to Baton Rouge next season for the sake of this quarterback room and for the sake of himself as well. Mike, this is a guy who really, really can step up his game over the next couple of months. A player who was on first, second-round draft boards halfway through the season, obviously, it's not going in his direction as it is right now. But you talked about the jump that quarterbacks have made from year one to year two in the LSU system, Jaden Daniels, Joe Burrow. A lot of people believe Garrett Nussmeier can be up next in that category as well as he continues developing, sheds that gunslinger narrative. He's a guy that you got to get back in Baton Rouge next season and keep him on that roster. He's the future of the program, and especially now that you lose a guy like Bryce Underwood, you got to flip that money, like you said, make the investment, and make sure Garrett Nussmeier returns to Baton Rouge for the second season as a starting quarterback.
You're looking at things now for Brian Kelly, obviously the program reeling after this. What does this mean for Kelly's future, if anything, at LSU? Do you think it puts this massive – I mean, there's been a question mark. Does it now even become stamped?
No, he's going to be there, Zach. I mean, the money's too much. You can't buy him out.
No, you can't buy him out. I mean, you're hovering around a $60 million buyout. So you got him. You got him for the long haul, right? But now it's time to buckle in and start to get this roster intact. It's all about roster reconstruction for this program for the next couple of months, Mike. This is a very brutal hit, and the hits are going to keep coming. This is the first domino to fall from LSU, being Bryce Underwood, but there are other guys who are also going to back off their commitment and go elsewhere. So now it goes back to what Mike was saying a couple minutes ago. You flip your money and you start to put it elsewhere in order to reconstruct this roster. Bryce Underwood's the first domino to fall. You'll lose another guy, and you got to continue to build up this roster for the long haul. So when it stands to Brian Kelly, this is a guy who is going to be here, but now it's time to, you know, pull up the pants, buckle them up, and let's go on ahead and try to do what we can do to make sure that this roster is intact for 2025 and for the long term as well.
Zach, they lost one over the weekend to an interior offensive lineman who flipped to Ole Miss, correct? And so he was first. And then Underwood today – now, I think you can get you an interior offensive lineman that's in the same kind of area code. The one thing with Bryce, he ain't going to get that area code. You way out of state if you're doing for that. But also, would now the target guy be Stewart at defensive line? Because, man, just looking at him on the hoof, he looks like what a defensive lineman should look like. And you got to keep that in-state guy in-state at a position that you are in desperate need of.
Yeah, no doubt. And the guy that they lost was Devin Harper, the number one interior offensive lineman in the state of Louisiana, ultimately flipped his pledge to Ole Miss. But now you got to go out and try to secure the number one defensive tackle in the state, and that's Jakeem Stewart. This is a guy who's really enjoying the recruiting process right now. He's officially visited Oregon, USC, LSU. Those are the three that are under his belt. He'll go take an unofficial to Oregon this upcoming weekend before wrapping up things on November 30th for an official visit with Ohio State. So once November 30th hits, he'll have wrapped up the recruiting process, officially visited four different programs, and then he's going to set to put pen to paper during the early signing period in December. LSU was a program that had a lot of momentum in this one. We'll see how that happens now with Bryce Underwood, with that news happening. Both of those guys took their official visits to LSU at the exact same time 2 weeks ago for the Alabama game. It'll be interesting to see how that kind of impacts his recruitment as a whole. But Jakeem Stewart's the guy that you got to roll out the Brinks truck for and make sure that you can try to get him in this 2025 class as well.
I bet Jakeem Stewart gets to meet Phil Knight over the weekend if he's going to Oregon.
Certainly say,
hey, Uncle great. Phil, how's it going? I know your check will clear. I'm not worried about that.
Zach, always appreciate your
no
time.
Doubt. Especially that's the school that's really piqued his interest on the NIL front. It's kind of hard not to when you get a blank check handed to you and you got the opportunity to go suit up for the number one team in America right now. Dan Lanning's doing a fantastic job with that program. But for me, I think it's going to be LSU, Oregon, and then Ohio State. Those are going to be the three that really, really get his attention when it's time to put pen to paper. We'll see if LSU and Frank Wilson can lock things up. But I'll tell you what. Ohio State and Oregon are both swinging for the fences for Jakeem Stewart.
Zach, always great information. Thank you. And also, kudos for joining us on such short notice.
Thank you, Zach. Appreciate it, buddy.
Of course, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. You can also follow him on Twitter at ZNaggy20. Zach Nagy giving us some great insights on the Bryce Underwood flip to Michigan. We'll be back talking with the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, as the Bayou Bengals get ready to host Vanderbilt. Coming back after the break here on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino. Happy to welcome in now Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers. Chris, it never seems to be dull news around these parts, huh?
Yeah, I was told a long time ago, guys, when I got into this business, my first AD who hired me at Georgia Southern said, just remember, son, never a dull moment. And probably no truer words ever said.
Chris, has been a wild ride this season for the LSU football team where, you know, opening game, you had some opportunities there and kind of slipped away. And then and all of a sudden, this team built up some momentum and you were playing better on the defensive side, the football. And, you know, you weren't running the ball well, but you were putting points up and you squeeze out a win against South Carolina, squeeze one out against Ole Miss. And you were saying, man, you know, Texas A&M, a big game. And after what we saw in the first half, it was like, wow, this team got it rolling right. And it got derailed after that. And this team has lost so much momentum and confidence as a football team since that half going into the second half against Texas A&M and to see what's happened. I think it's between the ears now, to be honest with you, Chris.
Yeah, I tell you, I think there's something to that, Mike. I mean, you look back at this season, it's I don't know whether to compare it to a roller coaster or a Shakespearean play. I mean, it's ups, it's downs. I mean, the question early on in the season was, you know, can you run the ball? Because eventually teams are, you know, look, you're playing very good teams. They got great coaches, facilities, and student-athletes. I mean, if you only can do one thing offensively, I mean, most every team, certainly in the SEC, will work very hard to scheme up a defense to take that away from you. And, you know, I think some of that has kind of been the issue for LSU going back to that second half in Bryan College Station. The other part, again, maybe more of the head-scratcher, to your point about running the football. I mean, you know, in the Arkansas game, you didn't run it great, but you won that pretty handily, and you ran enough to keep them honest, and you still had a good day passing. Didn't run it so well against Texas A&M. Didn't run it very well against Alabama. But last week, you had a really good day, especially, you know, when the game was on the line. You were able to, for the most part, especially in the first three quarters, you know, stay on schedule, get to second and three, third and one, third and two, which, again, knowing what we know about this passing attack, that opens up the playbook. And for whatever reason, and I think some of it, as soon as I say that, Mike, I think some of it is teams now have really determined that there's no over-the-top threat. And they're really just basically saying, we're not worried about you getting behind us, and we're going to play real tight coverage in the intermediate passing zone. And, you know, give Florida credit. I mean, they got credited with six sacks in the game. They took one away. We left the game thinking there were seven, but on that fumble by Nussmeier and then the fumble back by Emory Jones, that was ruled not a sack, but six sacks. So give Florida credit. And, again, they tried to go deep a couple of times and just couldn't connect with Chris Hilton. But, yeah, I mean, it's been just when you think you've got it figured out and you're heading in the right direction, something else slips. And I know that's frustrating for this coaching staff. And you could tell it listening to the players in their media session this week. It's frustrating for them as well.
Chris, the inability to punch it in the red zone, and we saw this early in the season, and now it's reared its ugly head again. Man, you look last week against Florida. They moved the football up and down the field. Look at time of possession. Look at total yards. But they had to settle for field goals. And I think that's the frustrating part for most LSU fans I hear from. Man, we moved the ball, but we can't score touchdowns once we get close. And that's got to be something Joe Sloan, Brian Kelly got to figure out for the next two games.
Yeah, no question. I mean, it was one of the weird games where, you know, you look at the stats. I was told also years ago that sometimes, son, the stats don't tell the game. Well, they certainly didn't on Saturday because LSU won time of possession. I mean, 92-43 snaps of the football, third down conversion rate, all of those things, as you said, between the 20s. And here's a stat that blew my mind. LSU had four drives of 12-plus plays. They've done that twice in the SEC era, and that goes back to 1932, Mike, as you well know. They had four 12-plus play drives, got one touchdown and three field goals, and that goes to, again, the frustration, the inability to finish those drives. And Coach Kelly said it, you know, minutes after the game in Gainesville. We didn't get any big plays in the passing game, minus the 28-yard touchdown to tie it up at 7-all. They got really three or four big plays, couple in the passing game and the one big run of 55 yards. And that was really the difference in the game. Everything else, LSU had it just the way they wanted it.
Vanderbilt and, you know, what Clark Lee has done there is just remarkable in how well they've played. Now, last week wasn't as successful, but they got caught in the buzzsaw. That Gamecock buzzsaw caught them last week. But what Diego Pave has done for that team, man, he's like a fighter. You knock him down, but you're not going to knock him out. He keeps you in the game, and their defense is what I would call quick, fast to get to the football. They're a very young team other than the secondary. That's where they've got some veteran guys at. And, man, you better get ready for a fight this coming Saturday, because they got a little bit of confidence. They can play with the top teams in the SEC. And if you look at what they did against Alabama and how LSU fared against Alabama, that don't stand up too well. But Vanderbilt, of all the teams, that's got to be the biggest surprise in the SEC, how competitive they've been all season long.
Yeah, I think, you know, credit goes to Clark Lee and his ability to really go find the right fits in the transfer portal. And it certainly starts with Diego Pavia. I mean, he's accounted for 20 touchdowns, 15 passing, only has three interceptions. He's got five rushing touchdowns. He leads the team in rushing. And as I like to say, it's also the moxie he plays with. And, you know, he kind of brings energy to everybody. I mean, just watch him. You can watch it on TV, and you can see the energy that he creates around his offense. And I think, it feeds to the entire team. And when you talk about Vanderbilt's defense, you know, when you look at their stats stacked up against the other SEC teams, there's no big number. I mean, they're kind of middle of the pack, bottom of the pack when it comes to some of the major statistical categories defensively. But the one that stands out to me, and I think this is why they've been successful with complementary football, is it's a team on offense that's converting third downs at 46%, but their defense is holding opponents to 42%. And that's why they have time of possession in their favor, and that's exactly how they beat Alabama. They never let Alabama, and they never let Jalen Milroe have the football. And, you know, I can't imagine it's going to be a different game plan if you're Clark Lee coming into Tiger Stadium. Oh, by the way, Vanderbilt hadn't been here since 2009. I imagine he wants to say, hey, look, let's just methodically run down the field and let's try to get LSU off schedule. Let's maybe get a little pressure on Nussmeier, make him maybe throw the ball off the back foot or spin his way out of the pocket into one of our defenders and get them in third and long situations and get them off the field. So, I mean, it's not rocket science. But without a doubt, I mean, they're trying to get their first winning season since 2013. And this is, I've said it all week, this isn't your daddy's Vanderbilt. This isn't your older brother's Vanderbilt. This is it's a really good team coming to Baton Rouge Saturday.
Chris, appreciate your time. Have a great call. 6:45 Saturday. We'll have it right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Always great stuff. Thanks for coming, stopping by with us, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, brother.
That was voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair. We're going to take a break, and when we return, do a little football and rock and roll talk. Felix Heyman, bass player and keyboardist for Zebra, will join us right after the break. Stay tuned here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Going to mix in a little rock and roll with some sports talk right now. Felix Heyman of Zebra joining us. Thanks so much for the time, Felix. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Hey, Felix, it's Mike, man. Great. Man, I look forward to hearing you guys tomorrow night. And I was telling Steve, kind of tell us a little bit about most bands don't stay together 49 years, brother. And
no, that's for sure.
Man, I've been around guys after a year and a half. Man, I hate playing with these guys. I'm off on my own with another band. So tell us the kind of road to success with the same three, you know, with Randy and also with Guy and yourself, 49 years. And do you have something planned special for next year that would make it 50?
Yes, we do. We have a record that we're going to be putting out in next year. and we're going to be doing some touring dates, and it's going to be an exciting year. We're going to do a lot of celebrating for the 50th anniversary.
I want to tell everybody tomorrow, and I think they still have tickets. They'll play Friday and Saturday night at the Fillmore, 8 o'clock. Bobby J will be there Saturday, and I'll go tomorrow. You know, our wives don't want us there together because Felix, you know, might be combustible, so to speak, with both of us around there. But, man, hey, I don't have to go no farther with you. But my deal is, tell us, maybe not the venues in the United States, what's the best venue you've played at outside the country?
We haven't played outside the country that much. We've played in places like Puerto Rico. We played at the Bellas Arts Theater in Puerto Rico, and we were doing a show with Night Ranger at the time. And the funny thing about it was that it was sponsored by Gillette, and they were giving away free razor blades. So I thought that was kind of odd.
That's pretty good. Settle this up with me. Didn't you guys play at the Whiskey a Go-Go last year in California?
I don't know if it was last year, but it was recent. We played there three different times so far, probably in the past 5 or 6 years.
I was telling Steve, you know, he's a college boy from Jersey. He don't know nothing about the real world. Man, growing up, man, the Whiskey a Go-Go in California, man, that was big time. You know, you kind of grew up in the 70s and 80s. Man, that was the place you wanted to play. So what was that experience like? Because I know, man, Jim Morrison and the Doors played there.
I'm glad you mentioned that because we were playing there. It was either June of last year or June of 2022. And I had been looking some things up, and it was June of 2022. But in June of 1967, the name of the band was Them, which was Van Morrison's band, okay, that they did Gloria with. And the opening act was The Doors, 1967. That's nuts.
And to think about it today, it really is. But how was it playing there for the first time when you went?
It's iconic to be able to play there. Like I said, and you have, you know, so many different people that have played there. You know, everybody's played there. Van Halen and, you have, I think, the Monkees played there. Everybody's played there. It's an amazing room. And it's, you know, it's got its own funky thing. It's almost like a French Quarter room, that room, the way it's designed and everything. It's got balconies. You know, the stage is really not that big, but the room just has a tremendous history being on Sunset Strip there and lasting for so long. It's amazing that any club could last that long.
The other thing, too, is, man, it kind of slipped my mind a little bit with this. It's that you guys are big in the New York area, correct? In New York State.
Yes.
Okay, here's my deal. A Bayou band, and they big in New York State? Oh, man. Hey, listen, you hit the big time when that happens because not a lot of bands can say that you started down here, Bayou, New Orleans area, and you got a lot of gigs in New York State.
Correct. Well, what happened was, you know, when we were coming up, we were playing, we were watching a lot of bands that were getting big here in New Orleans, you know, and in Louisiana. But it seemed like, you know, nobody ever left here, you know, and we really wanted to try and stretch our legs and see if we could get a record deal. And the only place that you could do that at the time was either New York or in Los Angeles. So we had a couple of people that we knew in New York. We made a deal with them to go up there. We stayed up there for the first time about 3 months. You know, we saved up some money because we knew we weren't going to make the money we were going to make here. We wanted to try to, you know, make a dent. And that was in like 1977, 78. And then we played there. And then by 1980, we were like the number one band on Long Island. And, you know, we played the whole tri-state area, which means New York, Long Island, Connecticut, New Jersey up in there. And it really turned out to be a great set of circumstances for us. And then when we would come back to New Orleans, you know, because we were gone, it created a whole big buzz of coming back to the city, coming back to New Orleans, and then going back to New York. So it really worked out for us. And, you know, and by the extension of playing New York, it gave us a great audience in Florida because everybody's a snowbird in New York. It's pretty fun.
Great. How many gigs you got a year, average?
Well, it's been increasing recently. Probably about 100, somewhere up in there.
Man, that's a lot of travel time, brother. I'll be honest with you. That's a lot.
It's a lot of flying. Yeah, it's a lot of flying. It's a lot of moves.
Okay. I'm going to put it best. You and I, we ain't young no more. Okay, they wouldn't put a Y-O-U-N-G by our names. But you got a lot of energy. No, you guys got a lot of energy. You got groups, guys in their 30s and 40s, they don't have that type of stamina to do that many gigs. And so, man, that's a great testimonial to you guys that you were able to keep it up and do it.
Well, the thing is that we never stopped. You know, even though we might have slowed down here and there, we never stopped. So we never stopped playing. We never lost our chops. You know, we always continued to play, whether, we had a few dates or we had many dates, but we still played. So, you know, whenever you're playing, you still got to practice. You know, that's how you get to Carnegie Hall, right? Practice, practice, practice.
Felix, I know it's been a long time in the biz for you, but can you even reflect back and remember the first time you got to hear Zebra on the radio?
Yes, I'll tell you. Well, first of all, the first time I heard it was here in New Orleans, which was very exciting. And then we got to hear it in New York. But there's a story about St. Louis because, you know, we played in New York and in Louisiana for several years because we were together 8 years before we were ever signed to Atlantic in 1983. So we played it in St. Louis after the record was released, and they were playing at Keishi, playing Zebra, playing the first record in heavy rotation. And then so we get out there, and we're doing sound check. It was Six Flags Over St. Louis. So after we finished doing the sound check, I said, well, you know what? I'm just going to go walk around, you know, to give you a little wristband. And so I go out there to go sign, you know, to go and take a walk around the park. And the next thing I know, I wind up, I walk straight into 100 people holding a record. And I'm like going, wow, this stuff works.
Wow, that's something else, man, to have that happen
that
for
exciting.
You. You got room for one more guy on stage? I think maybe Taysom Hill might take that job.
Oh, man, listen, Taysom could do anything, right? He's the Swiss Army knife. He could come up, maybe he could kick the bass drum or something.
Well, listen, Felix, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Man, we really
awesome
appreciate
stuff, yeah.
it. And, again, tomorrow night and Saturday, 8 p.m. at the Fillmore. I think they still have a few tickets left. And, man, listen, you enjoy yourself. You're a certain age. Man, always remember Zebra from down here. I was telling Steve, first time I heard you guys in Thibodeau, 1977.
At the Spectrum?
That's it, baby. That's it.
That's right.
I was there.
He used to see us at Cutoff. He used to see us at the Lights Fantastic and Cutoff and maybe the Safari and Galliano.
Yeah, and I think y'all played at the Yellow Banana, too.
We may have.
I think so, because that's his gig. But, yeah, I remember those gigs out there. But, yeah, the Spectrum is the first time I remember seeing you. So that tells us we're fairly close to Social Security age, so to speak.
That's for sure.
Felix, awesome stuff. Rock it out tomorrow. I know you guys are going to have a great time.
You know, I just got to tell y'all, you know, what's my luck? I come into town and the Saints are on a bye.
Yeah. Man, we could have fixed you up, man. We could have fixed you up with that. Hey, next time you come to town, Saints playing, hey, let me know. Well, I'll take care of that for
you. I will do that, man. I'm going to hold you to that one, Mike.
Oh, no, you ain't got to worry about that, brother. Thank you.
Appreciate your time, Felix.
Right,
have a good one.
I just want to say thanks, everybody in New Orleans. Thank you all so much. I'm looking forward to doing the shows.
Once again, Felix Heyman, bass player and keyboardist from Zebra, joining us. Awesome stuff there. We will take a break. When we get back, we're going to be closing things out here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Fun Thursday night football between the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns. Looking mighty ugly in Cleveland tonight. Should make for an interesting game. Be right back with more after this on WWL. Man, great stuff from Felix Heyman of Zebra. Thanks again for joining us. And Mikey D and Bobby Hebert are going to be chilling at the Fillmore. It's going to be very interesting. And I think it's funny you said back-to-back nights, not the same night, but Friday and Saturday, you guys kind of split it up. Who knows what happens when the Cannon and the Tilly are hanging out together? I know there's enough going on with the Mad Hatter's ball with you two.
Oh, yeah, we have a good time at Mad Hatter's. I will say that. But, you know, that was some other stuff in there, too, because of the fact Bob had an autograph session deal tomorrow.
Yeah.
So he couldn't make it to Friday. And on Saturday, for me, I got
LSU.
I got LSU coverage, but we'd have probably made that work some kind of way, but they may have had two young ladies that got involved. Say, this ain't happening. The kaboom might have been there, you know, that nitroglycerin.
Obviously, the big news we've been talking about, Mike, Bryce Underwood flipping from LSU to Michigan. A pretty big shocking news considering leading up to it, it looked like he was pretty entrenched in with Baton Rouge and committed there, but in the end, obviously, money talks. We know that's the business.
Yeah, and again, he's committed. That don't mean he's signed.
Right.
Okay, they might have another chapter in all this when it's all said and done. Man, you never know about guys. And in talking to Coach O all those years, he was telling me, Mike, the hardest thing is when you get a big-time recruit from another state. They'll give you that commitment, but it's holding on to it until signing day. And now, you know, with NIL money and everything else that's out there, you can see the also to pressure to stay in state. That's a lot of pressure on a kid because guess what? Mom and dad still live in state. They got to stay here unless they're fixing to move into Louisiana. But those rumors had been out there for quite some time.
Thursday Night Football coming up next here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. I want to thank all the great staff here at Treasure Chest Casino. Always hospitable and
yeah,
a great
super
time.
Here. Super here. You got to come eat at the game and also, too, man, go place a bet or two. And, man, they got a lot of nice gaming, food's fantastic, great people here.
Fans in the Pro tomorrow with Mike Haas and Deuce McAllister. Sports talk rolling on. We'll get into Thursday Night Football right after this, so stay tuned on WWL.